Astrology. Yes, astrology is such a wonderful topic. It's such a enriching learning. It's like reading the music of life, understanding the rhythm of the tides of the season. It's in a way hearing the sing-song of the planets and the cell cycles. It has been called the music of the cosmos. And astrology is, in its way, the musical notation of those cycles and rhythms, and all of it, how it connects. Also, in a way, how it disconnects. So let me start with the story of how I got into astrology, and also how I got out of it, and why I think that astrology is so fundamentally important. Because essentially it's part of a much larger system. Let me start with that. Astrology, alchemy, magic and mysticism are all part of the same story. In our reality, we live in four dimensions. We have the dimension of space, time, energy and consciousness. In our body, we can see that it is our anatomy, the physiology, the regulatory system, and our information integration system, let's call it consciousness. And in astrology, it operates with, let's say, the equivalent of the physiology of our body. Our body is based on the physiology, the cell cycles, the organ cycles, the rhythm of the organs, and the interaction between the cells, and astrology deals with precisely that. The regulatory system of the body, which goes one level deeper, is what happens within the cells and how the cells interact with and respond to those cell communications with the other cells, and how within the cells they then can transform what they do. They actually can literally transform molecules by transforming atoms. So that's the level of the alchemy. And then there is a still deeper level where in the body you can see that it is actually the information system as it is used by the cells, which determine how they form molecules and transform molecules. So that there is a deeper level of the cell understanding and the cell communication, which is part of the information field of the universe. Which is then magic, and magic we can connect to the mystery schools, or understanding of the mystery, that in its foundation this universe is not physical. It all starts with the quantum field in which atoms are formed, which then can combine to form molecules, which then can combine to form matter. So that's the reality that we live in the cosmos. That's the reality that we live in our body. Our body actually actively lives it. That's why the alchemist already pointed out we need to understand how body, mind, soul and spirit are connected in the same way as matter, molecules, atoms and quantum change are connected. And as part of that exploration of magic, which is, say, the psychosomatic effect. You can think something, you can act on it, and as a result, things happen. That's also known as the switch between dharma and karma. Dharma is that there is a possibility for things to happen in this cosmos, and karma is the things that happen in the cosmos, together with the sequences or consequences of all of your actions. So magic is the realization that that happens, that there is this psychosomatic coupling. Alchemy is the more specific looking at what in that connection between the psyche and the soma, between mind and body, between information and matter, how that precisely happened. So alchemy looks into that, describes that, explains it, and gives examples of that. So then you understand how thought and action are related, how dharma and karma are connected, and how your spirit and your body are that instrument for developing your life experience and learning about freedom of choice. But then, of course, you also realize that the alchemy which our body works with, every cell is doing exactly that in transmuting atoms and molecules, but it is never separate from what happens in the other cells. At the moment that the cell starts to do things independent of what happens in other cells, that's called cancer, and it can be destructive for the body and for being. So the cells always need to synchronize what they're doing so that they can synergize. And essentially, synergy is that part of the story where you're dealing with alchemy. Synchronization is the part where you're then dealing with astrology. So astrology is that story about synchronization. And now that you know how astrology is part of a larger understanding, let me describe how I got into it and how I got out of it. Before I do that, I need to make something very specific, which is that as astrology is part of a larger understanding, astrology, alchemy, magic, and healing are actually part of the same system. But then likewise, astrology operates at the level of the physiology of the body, just as alchemy operates at the level of the regulatory system of the body, and magic operates at the level of the information integration system of the body. They're separate dimensions, literally. And so in that sense, astrology, which is connected to the physiology, works in what's known at the astral level. Astrology and astral comes from the word aster, which is the Greek word for the star. In Latin, that would be stella. And the stars are not what it is about, but they are like the symptom of what it's about. They are the sign of what it is about. By the stars, you can see that there are rhythms in nature. By the stars, that you can see that there is a waxing and a waning of the moon, that there is summer and winter on the planet. There's the growth of the season and the fall of the leaves in autumn. So the astrology deals with the astral plane, and the astral plane is simply that part of the cycles of physiology as they are connected to the cycles of nature. So it doesn't mean that astrology determines your life. It doesn't mean that astrology determines how the universe is created. It simply means that astrology helps understand how the universe is composed of cycles, and that starts at the quantum level, it is seen at the atomic level, it is seen at the molecular chemical processes, and it is seen in the dynamics and the pulsations and the vibrations of matter. So if you look at that whole field of vibrations, then astrology is the language for that. I had to learn that. I had to sort of be coaxed into that. And as it happened, on one of my trips, after one of my studies, I met an astrologer, and he at some point said, well, it would be practical or helpful to look into astrology. He already knew that I had studied engineering, specifically civil engineering, specifically system theory, more especially wave mechanics, and he knew that I knew about the tides of the oceans on the planet. The story of the tides on the ocean on the planet is quite simple. If you imagine the Earth drifting alone in the universe, then you have the land mass, you have the water around it, and everything will be perfectly tranquil. The water will be smooth and flat because there is nothing to interact with it, because there are no sun and moon to create the seasons. There is no tidal attraction of the planets on the oceans. So the starting point is that the Earth by itself would simply be in peace and calm. But as soon as there is another planet in the game, and in this case you have the moon, the moon starts to pull on the Earth starts to pull at the moon, you have this gravitational effect, And what happens then can be imagined as if you have a ball on a string and you're swirling it around in a circle. The ball flies away, so the farthest part of the ball is stretched out as far as it can go away from you by the centrifugal force. But at the same time, with the string, you're pulling the ball. So the other side of the ball is being pulled in. And so that's what happens with the sun and the moon and the other planets when they interact with the surface of the waters on the Earth, that they are extended. The water is not a sphere, but becomes elliptical. It is pulled out one end, it is pulled out the other end, and that is something that you need to understand, that those are opposite forces. So when there is a high tide on the Earth, one part of the high tide is because it is thrown away from the other planet by the centrifugal force of the two planets rotating around each other, and the other high tide is caused by the pulling in by the other planet. So even though they look the same, they're a high tide rolling around the planet, it is still two parts of a dual force game. So in that sense, it is not just that you have the water of the oceans as a drop or a ball or a sphere on the Earth, but it's like this ellipse. It goes up on the one side, goes up also on the other side, and the Earth rotates in between. That's what we know as the tides. That doesn't happen just on the Earth, it also happens on the Sun. The Sun also is a ball. It's not solid with liquid, but it is gas with plasma. But the Sun by itself likewise would be a perfect sphere. It would be bubbling around in the way it's boiling. Essentially the Sun is a ball lightning. It's an electrical phenomenon. And the surface of that electrical phenomenon would be a perfect sphere if there's nothing else going on around it. But there is other stuff going on around it. There are other planets. And so on the Sun, in the same way, there are high tides and low tides. Wherever a sun is facing another planet, there will be a high tide on the one end, and there will be high tide by the centripetal force, the centrifugal force on the other side. So the centrifugal force at the far end of the other planet, the centripetal, is on the near side of the other planet, and the sun likewise has an ellipse for every planet and every mass effect body that is surrounding it. But that also means that the sun is radiating out light in different directions. If the sun were just a ball, the light of the sun would radiate out in all directions equally. As you would have with a light bulb, everywhere around the light is emitted. But due to the effect of the planets pulling the surface of the sun, the surface of the sun actually becomes a lens, just as you would have with a lighthouse. So the light is beamed out in more specific directions. And at the pointed end of the ellipse, the light is spread out more, and at the shallower edge of the lens of the ellipse, it is more parallel. And that's what is used in a light beam, so that the ships can actually see a rhythm of pulsations in the light, so that they know which lighthouse they're looking at. It's a signal for the ships to know where they are. Likewise, astrology interprets these signals from the sun as information by which they can understand how life forms on Earth are affected by the gravity field of all of the planets. As I said, astrology comes from the word astra, but actually it is more about the planets in the solar system, because it is the interaction of the planets with the Earth, with each other, and with the Sun, which causes a change of the electromagnetic field and the gravitational field between the planets. And the planetary environment around the Earth is a bit more important than what happens in the far star and the far galaxies, even though those influences must not be neglected. Karmic astrology in the Hindu system actually is very well aware that every star works as a lens for everything that lies at the other end of the star, so that every star actually is a beam of light which brings in the information from the gravity field around that star in its surroundings. So that, yes, there is a far effect through the stars on wherever you see the light of that star. The principle, however, is the same as we find in the planetary system, so it is easier to refer to the planetary system to understand what astrology is and why it works. As I already pointed out, what happens in the interaction between the planet we see as the tidal movement of the Earth, but we also see it as the tidal movement of every planet, and also of the Sun. But that means that the area between the planets is not just a simple field of nothingness. Everything in the universe is actually an electromagnetic field, a quantum field without particles and with particles. And at that level without particles, it's called the quantum field or the tetrionic quantum field. And that's where we're dealing with an electromagnetic field with pure electricity and magnetism without any particles as yet. That is the substrate of the universe, and that quantum field can be rippled, it can be distorted, it can even become curdled as a result of which matter can form in that quantum field. That's beautifully described in tetrionics. At a larger scale, we can just see that the field around the Earth, around us, is such a quantum field with curdled quanta around it, which we then see as the different forms of matter. And then we can see that there is the interaction between the quantum field and those blobs of matter. And that interaction between the quantum field and matter always comes in two forms. One of them is the linear form and one of the circular form. And in the planetary system, there will be those two flows in the quantum field acting as electromagnetic fields and electromagnetic flows on the particles in the solar system. So the linear flow will bring in or remove energy, and the circular flow will be the containment of energy in different regions. And in that way, between the planet, there will be the electromagnetic quantum field, but by the interaction of the planets, there will be the overlap of quantum fields of them, which are called the gravitational fields. And as a result of the interaction of the electromagnetic field with the particles, there will be scatter fields, which would be called the electromagnetic radiation, or the electron, proton, neutron particles, as they are then flowing in that environment as well. And that then is the pulsing bath in which the Earth and the other planets interplay with each other. So in that sense, between all of the planet, between all of the stars, there is this ether, this quantum field, this electromagnetic particle-free field, on which is superimposed a gaseous cloud of minute particles, on which there is superimposed particular blobs of matter, the stars, the planets, and so on, and these all interact with each other. That means that by the position of the planets around the Sun in the universe, there will be oscillations in that field around the planet, and a lot of those oscillations are directly tied in with the movement of the planets around the Sun and the change of solar radiation from the Sun to the Earth and to the other planets. And that's where you can then understand that astrology is the understanding that that vibrational field around us has a lot to do with how the planets interact with each other and how they interact with the Sun. At a crude and coarse level, you could see that the planets are like clockwork. Actually, the clockwork is derived from the motion of the planets. The hours of the day are based on the rotation of the Earth with the day and night. The calendar is based on the alternation of the seasons, and all of them can be reduced to the understanding that the Earth rotates around the axis, the Earth rotates around the Sun, the planets rotate around the Sun, and these are all mechanically, predictably orchestrated by the laws of Newton. These are simply inert bodies which, like a pendulum of a clock, rotate around the each other with very fixed cycles. Those can be calculated in great detail, and as a result it is possible for astronomers to actually calculate the position of planets hundreds and thousands of million years in the past. Of course, you do need to account for catastrophic catalytic events such as Venus being suddenly caught into the orbital sphere of the Sun, shaking up all of the planets amongst each other, as was described by Velikovsky and others, and as was recorded by the Bible and other books of catastrophes on the Earth. But for the rest, it is a very predictable clockwork, and even such a catastrophe of a planet, Venus, getting caught into that clockwork system can be calculated and accounted for by the same precision by the laws of Newton. But astrology is not about the laws of Newton. Astrology uses the laws of Newton, specifically astrology uses the rhythms of the planet to be able to know what's happening, but more importantly, astrology realizes that those rhythms are simply the metronome by which the radiation of the Sun and the gravitational field of the Earth shift with respect to each other, and that means that the vibrational field of the environment of the Earth is vibrating vibrations. It is not just having fixed rhythms, but it's having rhythm of rhythms. And it has changes, acceleration, decelerations of rhythms. It's like a musical composition. It's like an orchestration in which part of it is very fixed and very defined. And that part has to do with the electromagnetic, the quantum field, the electromagnetic van Oort gas cloud field, the star systems, the planetary system, and so on. And astrologers realized that once you understand those rhythms of the stars and the planets, you also understand the rhythms of the seasons. You then will know when winter takes place, the precise date of midwinter, which is the 21st of December. You can make a gospel around it and say, well, there is a Christmas thing. You can even take a leeway and say, well, we want to make more sure that we really know what's going on. And you can say, well, we're actually doing it on the 31st of December. But astrologers and astronomers know that midwinter is the 21st of December, or thereabouts, the precise moment that the Earth is furthest away from the Sun. And as it moves closer to the Sun, you go towards summer. When it's closest to the Sun, you're on summer. But that also depends on the tilting of the Earth versus the Sun. So there's these rhythms which can all be precisely calculated. The orbit of the Earth around the Sun, the tilting of the tiltedness of the Earth around its axis, determining when summer and winter is in the north and south hemispheres. And all of that determines when spring comes, when the flowers bloom, when the harvest can be collected, and when you need to have reserve to survive the winter. Astrology is much more than that, because astrologers realize that it is not just the seasons which affect what will grow, but in the season specific things will grow, and some foods stimulate our body, some foods stimulate our mind, some foods stimulate our soul and the way we interact with each other, some foods stimulate the spirits and our realization capacities. And so they saw that there is deeper connection between those seasons and the experiences within us. And astrology is about how we experience those rhythms around us. And the language of astrology simply helps to describe what the metronome of the planets is doing, and what the rhythm of the season of doing, and what the rhythm of day and night is doing in relationship to the far stars way beyond us. But those rhythms are pointed out so that you can know what kind of effects can be expected. Because like the tides on the oceans, the calculations of the astrologer are very accurate, very precise, and they define what will happen with the ocean tides. The Admiralty book on tides is based on exactly the same calculations as the astrologers use. With the knowledge of the tides, you know if your ship can go in and out of the harbor, and with the knowledge of the high tide, the leap tide and the neap tide, you actually know if areas of the oceans can be sailed into with your boat, yes or no. And with the knowledge of the tide, you can also in some extent know how much the heat will have put in motion the air of the atmosphere of the planet, so you can understand when there will be winds and when there will be trade winds. And in that sense, from those calculations alone, you can understand a lot about the tides, but also the climate. Those measurements go very far, because there are measurements which show how these changes in the quantum field, the electromagnetic field, the atmosphere field, and the environment that we live in will affect not only the planet but also nature. At the level of changes of the planet, there has been interesting research which shows that the quality of the water at a lunar eclipse will actually have a pattern. And if you put water in the window while the lunar eclipse comes by, and you feed that water to plants, for example tomatoes, then you can see that there is a difference of the growth depending on which part of the lunar eclipse the water was exposed to as the eclipse took place. Likewise, there are chemical reactions which are water-based, and other chemical reactions which don't work in the same way at the moment as full moon or new moon. Those are things which factories with those chemical processes need to take into account. But likewise, I once met a nurse in a psychiatric hospital, and he tried to point out to the directors of the hospital that they needed to reckon with astrology, they needed to reckon with the full moon and the new moon, because typically the 6 days around the new moon and the full moon, more clients would be admitted, because there are effects of that changing environment which act on our souls. And as every woman will know, the lunar cycle is directly connected to the menstrual cycle. In that manner, there are many cycles in nature which are connected to the cycles of the body, actually called chronobiology, which accounts for the difference between the seasons in the way we experience differences in our body. And the chronobiology actually goes into the detail that there is the confirmation of what was described in Indian and Chinese medicine, that different organs are more active over the 24-hour period of the day. And the finding is that it's not precisely the organs, but rather the endocrine gland for that organ, which is more active in that 2-hour period associated with it. And that indeed there is a cycle of these glandular activities, and that they complement each other and form a whole cycle, and that they also complement and can compensate for each other. just as is described in traditional Chinese medicine. And in astrology, you can see and understand how these cycles connect up, and you can find how the cycles of nature thus are correlated to the cycles which you can find in our body, in our organs, in our cells, even in the molecules, even in the atoms, and that you can take that into account. There are other very clear examples of that relation between the cycles of astrology, or the cycles of the patterns. Those are described by Lawrence Edwards in the appendix to his book, in which he noted that the buds of the leaves of next year's leaves on the tree have a pulsation in their shape which depends on the planetary conjunctions in the system as described by astrology. In his research, he showed that there is a vortex movement which is at the basis of the forming of the seeds and of the buds of the leaves, and you can compare that to the shape if you put your hands next to each other and do not press themselves against each other, but have them relaxed, hand palms and fingertips touching, but the space in between, and then you can see that there's a kind of shape which in geometry we call the physica pescis, and it is that specific shape which can pulse a bit, just as you can find when you open your hands a bit and close your hands a bit while you keep your hand palms and your fingertips touching. Lawrence Edwards noted that the buds of the leaves had a pulsation at the moment of the eclipse of the moon with a planet, and that the different trees, that there are different trees which have different planets to which they respond in that manner. Some will respond to the moon and Jupiter, some respond to the moon on Venus or moon on Mars, and so on. Which, by the way, connects it to the Druid tree alphabet, which was based on the understanding that those trees have a different significance and are, in a way, a different letter in the alphabet of, in this case now, as shown by Lawrence Edwards, the pulsation, the rhythm, the alphabet of the pulsations of the planets. Astrology has a whole story to tell on that relationship between pulsations in the environment and the response to that in our body, or in any living body, or as I mentioned before, in water. It has even been measured in rocks. For example, the Dragon Project in England was based on an electromagnetic measurement of the stones in Stonehenge, and it was discovered that at the moment that the lunar phase turned, turning between new moon and full moon, that the spiral flow over the stones in the stone circle, and of course the stones are connected in a circle, which means that the circle has a flow, and that all of the stones in the circle has a circular flow, and because of the shapes, that will be a vortex flow, so the flow over the stones will be the shape of a vortex, a spiral, but the Stonehenge system as a whole will also have the effect of a spiral, there's a vortex. And in the measurement of the Dragon Project, it was seen that at the turning of the lunar phase, the direction of the flow in that spiral turned around. So there are so many examples in which you can see that stones and water and plants and cells and animals and humans respond to these pulsations of the planetary rhythms. Astrology has that potential to describe that in detail. Essentially, it makes use of a form of mathematical notation which is called modulo mathematics. And modulo mathematics is a counting system in which you do a reset. For example, you count from 1 to 10, and then you start at 1 again, and then the numbers of tens you start counting on a separate wheel. So when we count from 10 to 11, actually we count, keep on counting from 1, from 9 to 0, and then we add another wheel to count what happens at the decimal place, and we add another wheel to count at what happens at the hundreds, and so on. And astrology has that kind of counting system. It has a very neat and elegant counting system because it is able to use the same notation for the rhythms of all of the different planets. Let me just simply describe that. The zodiac or the mandala of astrology is based on, let's say, a flat piece of paper in which you then prick a hole to put the point of a compass, and then you can draw a circle. Then you take away the compass, and essentially you already have the whole story in place. You see that there's a hole in the paper, and that's the hole of the soul. That's the connection point where the invisible and the non-physical connects to the visible and the physical. And the circle is then the representation of that rhythm, any rhythm. It could be every rhythm. In fact, in astrology, it is every rhythm. So in astrology, you relate the center point to the circle. And even though the astrology describes the event, what happens on the circle, actually what it deals with is what happened right at the start, right at the beginning, before anything became visible, was the making of that point of contact, the piercing of the paper by the point of the compass, making a hole in the paper, which is the singularity where everything that happens in astrology, everything that you then draw on that paper, is connected in that hole. And that hole is like the middle point of a crystal ball. When you have a crystal ball which is perfectly spherical, the light from everywhere will be focused like a lens in the middle point of that crystal ball, which means that the light of everywhere comes together in one point, which means that everything is focused in that one point. And it is in that way that that point in the middle of the crystal ball is the point where everything turns inside out. The light crosses from going into going back out of the sphere. And so it is in that crossing point, that zero point, that everything happens in the crystal ball. Likewise, it is in that hole in the paper on the zodiac drawing in astrology, where everything that connects in the drawing connects to your soul, because that point is a singularity where things turn inside out. Once you realize that, then you realize also that the circle represents any circle and every circle, and that is also how astrology then uses it. The circle is at the same time the relationship between day and night for the rotation of the Earth around its own axis, but at the same time that circle represents the movement of the Earth around the Sun. In the same way, it then represents the movement of every other planet around the Sun. And in the same way, it actually represents the movement of the Sun in the universe as it travels on its journey. Astrology has a convention that you slice that circle in four parts. And essentially, those are the brain hemisphere. So you have the left side, the right side, the front side, and the rear side. And those four parts are essentially the four elements of alchemy. And that's where you then see that there is a direct connection between the rhythms of astrology and the transmutations of alchemy. And actually, when you look at the description of astrology, you can see that those four elements, which you can draw with these four lines, one vertical, one horizontal, through the midpoint of that circle, they represent the left brain, the right brain, the front brain, and the rear brain. The front brain is where you individualize things, where you have a point of focus. The left brain is where you can line up thought, logical thinking. The right side is the plane of discernment, where you can have a contextualization or image thinking. And the rear side is where you look at the volume, the entirety of things, which is where everything connects up. So in that sense, the rear is the universe as a whole, and the front is any specific point of attention which you focus on. The left side of the brain is the linear logic and how you come to conclusions, and the right plane is how you create images out of that. And all of those four parts interplay, so in that sense we have four brain halves, and in that way the four parts of that circle, also called a four-fold circle or the square circle, and nowadays we would call the four phases of a cycle, are all interconnected. So the four brain halves are then shown in that initial image of that circle with the vertical and horizontal line in it, which is also known as the Celtic cross, which is the link between spirit and body in that sense. Astrology realizes that there is a fourfold cycle which repeats itself within itself. And if you have four elements which repeat itself within itself, you get a 4x4 matrix, which is 16. And those are essentially the transmutations from one element to the other, from earth to earth, from earth to water, from earth to air, from earth to fire, and so on. Which means that you have 16 transmutations, out of which four are where it turns back into itself. Earth to earth, water to water, air to earth, fire to fire. So once you know that, those are actually those four quarts of the circle, then you realize that you only have 12 changes that you really need to take into account, because the others are, say, steady states. In mathematics, you would call the determinant of the matrix. So you need to look at those other parts, and that was astrology describes in the zodiac with 12 elements, the 12 apostles of the Christ. Christ is the rear brain, Arjuna is the front brain. The rear brain is also called Krishna. Christ Krishna is the same, the front brain Arjuna, and the focus Michael is the same. So you can then understand that the zodiac of astrology is the mandala of the apostles, or it is the knights of King Arthur. But actually you need to understand it's always the other way around. The knights of King Arthur were the elements of the zodiac, and the apostles of the Christ are the elements of the zodiac. The knowledge of the zodiac was much older, and it was represented in a metaphorical form. It is a story in itself how the zodiac then has many levels of meaning and a very consistent inherent logic. And I will just point out one part of that zodiac understanding, which is based on the Chinese and Oriental understanding of the rhythms of nature. And there you can see that the starting point of the whole cycle is in Aquarius, which is represented by a parallel line, which is actually where the two worlds meet, where spirit and body meet, and that can be represented as the sign where the seed is planted in the earth. Pisces, next to it in the cycle, is where the seeds start to sprout in the soil, roots are formed. Those are the long toes of the diplomatic sensitivity of the Pisces tribe. The next step over is where the first leaves start to sprout, where things become visible, where the plant which was under the soil comes out and is seen as something emerging, which is then called Aries, the ram, the initiation of the cycle. That's where the Western system start, which is too late if you really understand how the principle works. The step after that is Taurus, where the little seed has roots and can stand as a little plant but needs care. It is the seedling in the pot which better be left undisturbed. The next one after that is Gemini, which is where the seedling is actually strong enough to be transplanted. So that's where you can put the seedlings out and put them in the garden, which is that represented by Cancer, which is also the encircled, protected, sheltered environment, where the seed can then grow to become a plant. And in Leo, the next plant, next element over, which is right opposite Aquarius, you then see that the seed has turned out inside out, very literally, in the flower. In the flower, in the structure of the flower, you can see the crystallization pattern, which was already ingrained, literally, in the seed. And in the in Leo, had the people who love the limelight, you can see that there's this exchange between the flowers, the cross-pollination, the fertilization, the inside and the outside connect. Spirit and our body are actually having their experience out in, say, the summer season of the lifetime. After which, in Virgo, you can see that the seed forms, and in the that the fruit forms, and in the fruit you recognize the tree. After which, in Libra, there is this ripening process, in which a crucial transition needs to be taking place, because without that ripening, it will not become a bearing fruit. Next step over in Scorpio, the fruit actually then falls under the tree and just is smothered by the tree, or it falls under the tree and it replaces the old tree, or it falls off the tree and it is carried to be planted elsewhere. The planting elsewhere is then seen in the sign of Sagittarius, which is shown as a bow and an arrow, which is the will and the intent of the direction action, as you put it out in the universe. Is also shown as a centaur, a half-human, half-beast. So it's our spirit nature and our animal nature connected. That's the vehicle by which we can put thoughts in action and can put achieve things on the planet. It's also associated with the sign of the priest. And then from there, as Sagittarius, as it is then called, it is like the export division, where the fruit is then put in its proper place on the earth, which is then seen in Capricorn, which is a dual sign as well. It's a dolphin tail of and it's a goat, which means that it can go from the oceans to the top of the mountains. And so when the seed is planted, you can plant it anywhere on the earth, but the seed will become fruitful only if it is planted in good earth, and then the cycle can repeat itself. Astrologers understand that cycle, which I have now described for the seed in the rhythm of the season, to apply for every other planet and every other process which we have in the universe. In that way, we can then understand how the seasons apply to every planet, and that within us we have seasons for every planet that we relate to. And some of these planets are very fast. Mercury next to the Sun has a shorter than yearly cycle, as to Mars and Venus. They are very fast. And then Earth evidently has the year cycle, and then the outer planets have much slower cycles. And in our being, we have all those cycles, and we have all those levels of process developments. So it takes longer for some parts of the processes to come to closure. And as I mentioned before, in our body we have the lunar cycle, which is most explicit in the female and the menstrual cycle, but it is also associated with the 28-year cycle of the development from baby to child to adolescent to adult, which is the ripening of the individual through the lunar phases of the unfolding of consciousness. So in that way, we can then have the understanding that astrology is a tool by which the rhythms of the cycles can be discerned, but also that the multiplicity of those cycles and rhythms can be appreciated. And in that sense, the mandala, the zodiac drawing of astrology, is in essence a musical composition, and it has many different layers of notes. And instead of a musical note composition, you would have notes on top of each, lines on top of each other with notes hanging in them. And as astrology makes use of a modulo notation, they already know what the rhythms are, they already know what the seasons are, they look at the crossing point between them. And those crossing points are very important, because in the fourth phase cycle, or the square circle as alchemy calls it, the new moon, the full moon, the waxing moon, the waning moon, they are all part of that rhythm. And those rhythms interplay with each other in what you would call Doppler effects. One note goes up, other goes down. And as a result, you can see the shift in the relationship between those cycles, which relativity theory actually describes. But the crossing point, which quantum theory describes, is where you actually have interactions, where the one cycle can, in a way, cross-connect to the other, where there's a harmonic resonance between the cycles and a different kind of attunement, where the regulation between the cycles can take place. And it is a story in itself how that is all contained within the notation of astrology. And it's really very worthwhile also because then you can see how that notation not just encompasses the rhythms of nature, but also the meanings of the gods of the Olympus, which are in fact the functioning of our body organs, and how they then combine in the processes that we experience in our body. But those processes in our body are connected to the processes in our environment. Evidently, the physiology in the body is part of the food chain around us, and that we at times need to take decisions about which path to follow. Once you understand that we have winter, spring, summer, and autumn, then you can also appreciate that in each of these seasons, you have all of the seasons. So you have the spring of spring, you have the summer of spring, you have the autumn of spring, you have the winter of spring, and so on. But it can be very confusing if you go out someday and you discover that it is a wonderful day, the sun is out, everything is blooming and it's wonderful, but you're not aware that you're actually experiencing the summer of autumn, and that very soon the surroundings will not be in full summer but actually be in full winter. And if you took the wrong decision there, you will have feasted up your supplies instead of stored them so that you can survive the winter. So astrology understands that and helps point out these cycles, and the cycles within cycles, and the cycles within the cycles within the cycles, so that you have a better overview of which waves you are surfing and how you can best navigate between them. So in that sense, the astrology has a whole level of understanding on the coincidences and the oppositions, the support or the suppression of those different cycles, as you would actually see it in physics, wave mechanics, and as you would hear it in musical compositions. So in that sense, astrology is a language for the understanding of the wave mechanics of physics, but it is also a notation for the appreciation of the rhythms and the tones of music. And that's also what I then described separately in a project called Math and Musics, where actually we experience the astrology in our body, because the physiology in our body is composed of all these cell cycles which form organ cycles which form life cycles in our body. And astrology helps to understand that. To conclude, there's much more to say about that, but I'd like to round it off here because there's so much more to say. I would just like to round it off with the reason why I stopped with astrology. at some point I realized that the astrology of the West was only part of the story. There's also the astrology of the East, which basically doesn't use the moon, but the sun, but the moon as the rhythm indicator, as is the same with Arabic astrology. Actually, the Arabic calendar is much more based on that. And so, when you go out, you can also see that there's the Chaldean astrology, which is based on the stars, which is also found in the Hindu astrology. And as I was looking at these different forms of astrology, and evidently the Aztec astrology is really elegant and beautiful and logical, I discovered that in some parts of the Hindu astrology, which is known as the karmic astrology, you then look into the position of the stars, and you can then actually calculate how many children the sister of your father would have. And when I realized that that was all very real, I also understood that astrology was not what I was looking for. I discovered that by astrology you can actually predict events very precisely, and you can actually predict your experience of events very precisely. But what good is the knowledge of things if they are already fixed and determined? If I can calculate how many offspring somebody far away in my family tree has, then that shows that everything is predetermined in a very precise way by the chronometry of these planetary clocks. But I wanted to know precisely how do we play and interplay with that. And that is where I then stepped out of astrology, which, by the way, at that time I was so well versed in that I could meet people, and just seeing them I could know what their sun sign was, what their moon sign was, what their ascendant was, and sometimes even what their dragon node was. It was a feeling which I had immersed myself in so well that I knew that language. So when I stepped out of that understanding of astrology, it was for the reason that I was more curious about if everything is so determined in those rhythms of the planets, then what is our ability to actually choose within that? And that is why, where in stepping out, I realized that astrology applies to the astral plane, which we would call the physiology of our body, or the planetary cycles, the seasonal cycles of our environment. But that there is a deeper level where these cycles connect, and in the crossing points there is the possibility to actually shift the weight between the cycles, which is where alchemy then comes into the story. And then realized later that there are connections between those crossing points, which is where the information in formation actually determines the patterns as a whole, and that it's at those deeper levels that the critical decisions can be taken. And it is from there that I then was able to work out the principles of freedom of choice, which I've described elsewhere. So let me just round off this story here now with a brief summary. By the invitation of a friend, I entered into astrology, which at that time I thought was nonsensical, didn't make sense at all. And later I discovered that it actually recapitulated what I had learned in engineering school about wave mechanics, and later I realized that it connected up to our body rhythms and all of medicine, and later I realized that it connected up to all of biology and the plant rhythms, and later I discovered that it also connected up to, say, the chemistry of physical nature. I learned to understand the language of astrology and found it was very powerful. And at some point I might like to describe the work of Roberto Renu, what he discovered and what we discovered together, and what is called hypermandala.com, and how astrology actually connects to the Platonic solids, how that connects to the I Ching, how it connects to the Kabbalah, how it connects all philosophical notation systems humanity knows. And so out of that I realized that there was a very good use for astrology, and the better you understand it, the better you can make your choices in the environment that you live in, the better you can appreciate that other people use the same ingredients but use them in a different manner. Like they have the same notes in the music but they play a different melody, and out of that you can better understand which people you are, you can with greater ease symphonize, and which people are more work, because it will apparently appear as a cacophony at first until you learn to retune yourself to fit in with that. So astrology is a very powerful learning instrument. And it's also practical to realize that astronomy is like the grandchild of astrology, and where alchemists realized that they needed to have more precision in the rhythms of the transmutations which they were studying in alchemy, and thereby created astrology. Likewise, the astrologers at some point realized that they needed to have more precise calculations for the positions of the planets and the interactions of the planets, and they created astronomy. But astronomy is sometimes forgotten that the source of it is astrology, which came out of alchemy. And so in astronomy you sometimes find that people can calculate the positions of the planets but no longer experience what that do to us. They've gone into a description instead of the experience. And that's also why I am glad that I could now tell this story of astrology. It is good to know that we can describe things, but it's also good to know how and why we experience things. And precisely, it's good to know that in our body we experience all of the processes that happen around us in nature, and they are linked. And astrology helps to understand that, and as a result it can help you make better choices.